I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. Sad as it is to say, the news from Gaza hasn't changed much since yesterday. Israel has only broadened its bombardment, and diplomacy seems to be ineffective. So we're going to hit pause on the Gaza story today and turn to another story in the same geographic neighborhood. For the American veterans of the war in Iraq, we've heard about their sadness and heavy hearts in recent months. The country they fought for, some died for, is not a picture of stability right now, not by a long shot. Just today, the Sunni extremist group ISIS blew up a key bridge north of Baghdad. The Iraqi army is ill-equipped to fight the insurgency, and the White House doesn't have any easy answers. All this is the subject of a new documentary airing tonight on PBS, produced by our WGBH sister program, Frontline. It's called Losing Iraq.
What's going on in Iraq is not 800 Syrian militants running into Iraq. It's the Sunnis, tribes, probably 20% of the country, have lost patience with the government in Baghdad led by Prime Minister Maliki, and encouraged by the Syrian war, and in part armed by the Syrian war, have risen up.
That's journalist Thomas Ricks, and Frontline's Michael Kirk, the director of this film, joins me in the studio. There are so many moments in the Iraq narrative where you could say, aha, that's where it went wrong. That's when the sectarianism started. But let's go back to the beginning of the Coalition Provisional Authority and Paul Bremer, who was kind of the American viceroy, because it shows the foundations of where we are today.
You really realize that this interplay of hubris and lack of experience. And Bremer had no preparation for this job. He knew very little about the Middle East, doesn't speak any Arabic or other languages in the region, and I think goes in there believing in some way, well, I'll be the civilian authority, I'll get the lights running, I'll get the water going, I'll get a kind of government established to get the military out of there, impose America on it, get a democracy going, drain the swamp, all those aphorisms that were roiling around at those times in front of all of us. Bremer was our tip of the spear who went in naively and in some ways is the ultimate metaphor for what happened.
And one particular move that Paul Bremer made in those first few days that we can actually see leading to the current sectarianism, what was that?
Well, the first one was something called CPA, number one. And the idea was get rid of Saddam's Baathists, largely Sunni. The Sunni minority had dominated in political and educational and cultural terms Iraq. The idea was if you could get them out of the government, you'll get rid of the harbinger of Saddam. People will rise up from the Shiite world and the other Sunni and Kurd worlds, and they'll all say, okay, well, we'll collaborate and everything will be all right. So his very first order, in the face of great struggles by the CIA and the other Office of Humanitarian Assistance run by General Jay Garner, who had come in and said, no, don't do this. 50,000 people are going to be angry at us, and they're the wrong people to be angry at us. He nevertheless went forward with this idea. And by saying that this was the rule of the land, anywhere from 20 to 50,000 Baathists by nightfall were mad at America and had a kind of grudge that would eventually probably, you could draw a direct DNA line into the insurgency.
Michael, when you spoke with experts like General Jack Keane, who told former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld not to invade Iraq, that it was a bad idea, did you hear any plausible scenarios in which the war could have been prosecuted in a way that would not have led to the sectarianism that we see today?
I think looking back, which is easy to do for them and for us as journalists and as viewers, it was bad from the very, very beginning. Keane would tell you that never was the idea even, this is astonishing to me, the idea of an insurgency, the idea of sectarian violence, the idea of the potential roiling trouble that was going to emerge, never seemed to cross the table as they're negotiating. So what do we do? How many guys will stay? How many people? What kind of forces do we need? Who should come in when the initial troopers are gone? None of that was part of the planning. And somebody like Keane could look back on it now, as he did then, and say, hey, we're going down into the quicksand here.
Michael, what was it like for you? Because, you know, as you said, you've been covering the story for the last 10, 12, 13 years, spoken with a lot of people along the way. What was it like for you to kind of go back through the whole narrative of the U.S. invasion of Iraq up to the present day?
It was 3.5 weeks ago that we said the ISIS moment is not more than a moment. It's the next act, and here we go. Yeah. To see all of that start to happen on the screen in the last 3 weeks was, for me, literally alarming. It was these moments that were both prescient as we were gathering them and didn't really know the way they would fit into some future narrative like now, and at the same time, alarming because you were reminded of what you didn't know and what you didn't know you knew. And, you know, there were all those Rumsfeld-like moments that happen, and you just say to yourself, oh, my God, watch this. This is Vietnam again.
Well, alarming, too, in the footage that you've got in here, because this is a pretty violent episode of Frontline. I mean, it's the Iraq story, so we know what to kind of sort of anticipate. But you're showing images of pictures that we've heard about but haven't really seen, the burned bodies of those contractors. We've seen them before, kind of blurred out, and the camera doesn't really linger, but you guys linger in this episode. What were those discussions about, and what was that like for you to kind of almost be re-traumatized to all this stuff?
Well, it was re-traumatizing. It is, we made the decision to show the war in all of its gruesomeness, as compacted as it can be, because we have all of that footage and all of those battles, Fallujah 1, Fallujah 2, the Sumara mosque bombing. So we thought it seems really important to not only talk about the political history of what happened, but to show viewers what was that really like.
At the end of the doc, you've got Ryan Crocker, the former U.S. ambassador to Iraq as well as Afghanistan. He's intoning pretty ominously, just as we're sitting in Washington, I can assure you ISIS is in Mosul figuring out how to get at us next. I assume he meant the U.S., and I'm just wondering, I mean, does that mean Iraq's going to weigh on Obama's balance of his term in the presidency?
Seems like it has to. I mean, seems like whether he wants it to or not. There were 16,000 people from the State Department in Iraq. We were hardwired into how that government ran. When we pulled 10,000 people in those first months in 2011 out of there, not only did we unleash forces in Iran and others that came in and impinged on Maliki, we unleashed the worst aspects of his fears and worries about the Sunnis, about sectarian conflict, about his own generals in a coup. The bloodbath began in small measure and now increasing measure. But for right now, the President of the United States, Barack Obama, who didn't want anything to do with this, has it tapping him on the shoulder. But oh my God, you listen to Crocker at the end of this film and you say to yourself, this is just the beginning of something that could go very badly, not only for the president, but for America.
And the Mideast.
And definitely the Mideast.
Michael Kirk, producer of Losing Iraq, tonight on PBS. You can check your local listings. Thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure.